Hello and welcome to season 3 of On My Last Eggs. I'm Rachel, and like millions of other women worldwide, I'm navigating the wild throes of perimenopause.
When I went on Low Swimming and I talked about being menopausal, some of my friends said, God, you were posh having a menopause.
I'll be lifting the lid on what that whole messy, confusing journey entails, with plenty of lols and some WTFs along the way.
I think there is a thing that menopausal women are ladies who lunch, because you've got the time to think about it. You've got the money to
solve
it.
The luxury of having a menopause. Yes. I'm very excited to welcome today's guest on My Last Eggs. Carolyn Harris is an MP. She's the chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Menopause. She's the co-chair of the Menopause Task Force, part of the Menopause Mandate Team, and she's very, very vocal about menopause and getting stuff done. You are just an absolute force, Carolyn. How are you?
I'm all right. Just, it's typical. Wednesdays are always a busy day in Westminster for me, and today was an exceptionally busy day, but good. Nice to see a bit of sunshine for the change, isn't it? Bit of natural vitamin D.
We'll talk about supplements shortly, because I think you've got a few things to say on that which might be useful. But first of all, I always like to start by asking people about their own menopause experience / journey. So tell me about yours, Carolyn.
Well, I didn't know that I was on my journey. It was a big, big shock to me. If I take you back to why I didn't know I was on my journey, because back in 1989, I lost my son Martin in a road accident. He was 8. And obviously, I was in a really dark place for a good few years. And at the time, I was a barmaid and a dinner lady, a school dinner lady. When it first happened, I took a lot of pride in not going on antidepressants. I thought that was a sign of weakness. I thought that I wasn't going to get used to my grief by dosing myself up with drugs, as I thought of it. I worked my way through it, and when I started to come out of that dark place, I realised that it was one of those things in life that can either literally make you or break you. A lot of relationships break up when there's a tragedy like that, and David and I were stronger as a couple after that. We had Stuart, who at the time was 3 when we lost Martin, and by the time I started to come out of this awful place, Stuart was knocking 5. And I decided that I wanted to do something more. I loved being a dinner lady. I liked being a barmaid, but I wanted to do more. And I wanted to do something that was going to completely occupy my time, as if being a mother of a young child and working isn't. So I had this mad idea that I wanted to go to university. I'd wanted to go to university when I was like in my teens and I'd never got there for one reason or another. So I thought, well, I'll go and see. And I got accepted. And I spent the next 4 years, thinking they were going to come and tell me that I shouldn't have been there, that they'd made a mistake letting me in. But it filled those hours in the day when I wasn't in working and when I wasn't being a mother and a wife and a housewife. And that's what I did. I just spent the next at least 20 years filling my life with everything, cramming everything in, so I didn't have time to think. In 2001, I had Tom, who's now 21. And then in 2003, I had an ectopic pregnancy. And after the ectopic pregnancy, my whole cycle, my body function, everything was just absolutely screwed. I was having really weird periods. I'd go for a month, I wouldn't have a period. I'd bleed for a fortnight, then I wouldn't bleed for a month. So by the time I hit 50 in 2010, I never had normal periods at that point. So when I bled continuously for 6-7 months, I just thought it was one of those things. And I was collapsing on the office floor. I was having to go to bed. It was horrendous. I had completely and utterly exhausted. And I was in the office one day and a friend of mine was there and she was going away on holidays. And she said, I'll be back in a fortnight if you're still alive.
Wow.
And I said, what do you mean by that? She said, have you looked at yourself in the mirror? I thought, no, why? So that scared me a bit. And I phoned my GP there and then and I told him what was happening. And he said, right, come down and see me straight away. So I phoned my husband. He picked me up, took me down the doctor's. The doctor took bled out of me there and then, and said to my husband, take her and this down to the hospital, to the haematology, and get it tested. We did that. We drove back to the house. I must have been about 5 minutes from my house when the doctor phoned me and said, hospital have phoned, there's a bed waiting for you, go straight back in. The nurse said to me when I arrived, there's the woman who's the walking dead. I had a haemoglobin of 4. So when I eventually got me into bed, they couldn't do anything to have a look why I was bleeding, because my blood was so low, they had to give me either 3 or 4 pints of blood and a pint of iron. And that was done over the next 48 hours. So I was just tucked up for 48 hours and I was having all this stuff in me. They kept doing blood tests. You know, I mean, this was like 2 o'clock in the morning, they were taking blood out of me. 4 o'clock in the morning, they were taking blood out of me, just trying to get my blood level to a level where I wasn't going to die on the operating table. Eventually got me there, tucked me in, and the next thing I knew, I'm coming round, I've had massive fibroids removed, and I never bled again. And when I came out of hospital, I didn't think about it at the time, but what had happened was that for the first time in about 20 years, I couldn't physically or emotionally be that push, 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 go, go, go person. I had time on my hands, I had time to think, I had time to mope, time to dwell, and what happened was I sunk into a depression. When I came out to hospital, I went to my GP, and then going up to Christmas, I went to my GP, because this happened in November, and I said to him that I was now, had too much time on my hands, and I started to grieve for Martin, and I was having a nervous breakdown. So I had some cognitive behaviour therapy, I had diazepam, I had Valium, and eventually they got me settled on antidepressants. I was on a really high dose, and then gradually over the next few years, I started to reduce the dose, but I never ever felt normal again. There was always something. I was always tired. I was always anxious. My joints were aching, I was really struggling. I'd get up off the chair and I'd say, oh, age, don't come alone. We never socialised, I never went on holidays. I come to work and I go home from work. And during this time, I got elected as an MP and I was doing an okay job, but I was only doing my job. I had a flat up here and I'd be going to my flat as soon as work finished. And I'd go to sleep and I'd wake up the next morning, come back in, I'd do my job, I'd go back to the flat, go to sleep, and I was just living to work. It was during this time that a couple of campaign groups had come and asked me, was there anything I could do to help them promote their attempts to get the menopause recognised? And they wanted to do two completely different things. One was looking at posters in GP surgeries, another one was looking at the lack of training for doctors. And I just thought we'd give them a platform. And it was around this time, around about 2017, I think it was, that I put in for a debate for International Menopause Day and thought that it would be poorly attended. I thought, oh, maybe I won't even get it. But I did get it, and it was really well attended. And the vibe in the chamber was really positive. There were men and women in there. There were women telling their personal stories. There were men telling us about the women in their life. It was really good, and I can remember saying that I'd sail through my menopause, but I was doing this for the other women who were struggling. I did not think I'd had a menopause.
Menopause denier, Carolyn.
I was a menopause denier. And then I got contacted by more and more different organisations and different celebrities, and they were coming to talk to me about menopause. And when I was listening to them talking, it was literally like somebody put a light bulb on. I suddenly realised that all the things that I'd been suffering with since I'd had my fibroids removed and before, they were talking about me. And I've suddenly realised that I hadn't had a nervous breakdown. I'd been menopausal. And all the other things which I had, all the other symptoms, I was doing what so many women do, is and just not finding time to think about it. And then it took me another 2 years before I went on HRT. And I only went on HRT when I was having a conversation with Davina, and we were chatting away, and she said, you know, what kind of HRT are you on? I said, I'm not. And she said, why? I said, I'm too old. She said, I don't think you are. You want to find out. So I made it my business, because I did so many negative stories by that point about how women couldn't get HRT off a doctor, that I thought, right, whilst I'm in this job and I can afford it, I'm going to go private. So I went private. I went on HRT. I went on estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. And the minute I knew that I was having that prescription, the minute I felt in control, I felt I'd done something to turn my situation around. Medication arrived a couple of days later, and it must have been the placebo effect because, if, you know, in my mind, once I put that gel on, whoa, I was fine. And then I would say within about 2 months, I could really start to see the difference. I could really start to feel myself going to a place I don't think I'd ever been since 1989.
First of all, I'm so sorry to hear about Martin. That's an absolutely devastating thing to happen to you. Well, I was going to say, often with women, they talk about, you know, getting their old self back. But what I was going to say to you is your old self is a very confusing thing, because like you say, that was pre 1989.
And I was 28, 29 years of age, you know.
Yeah. And so you had this long wilderness period of trying to fight grief and, you know, push it away by keeping yourself busy.
And blaming everything on grief. I've never been one for the doctor. And the only reason I have contact now is because last summer I got up the courage to go and ask my GP to give me the HRT on the National Health. So this is the longest period of time, you know, that I've been back and forth the doctor. I would rather go and buy a box of Panadol than go and get the right stuff for the job.
Well, I think you are a classic example of what most of us do. And the fact that you were suffering with periods that were nearly killing you and not doing anything about it. I mean, let's go right back to periods, because we don't really talk about what periods ought to be. We don't even know what normal is. So when we have really horrendous pains, when we have really heavy bleeding, we just say, well, that's what periods are. That's what we have to put up with. I think this speaks to a massive women's health crisis, doesn't it? A, with what we think we are entitled to, what we think we deserve. You know, we don't want to stop. We don't think we can take ourselves out of the game. You know, what you said about not wanting to take antidepressants as well. We mustn't be weak. You know, we must deal with what's handed to us. I think that is a very female thing, unfortunately.
I think we're our own worst enemy in that we'll always prioritise somebody else over us. When I think back to my mother when she was, must have been going through it, and I think to my mother's sisters, and my gran, and my friends who were around me, none of them had a menopause. I've had this conversation with my friends, and I've said things that were going on in their health, which they did nothing about at all, not one of them ever put that down to being menopausal. It was just what we have to put up with. It's what women have to put up with. There's nothing you can do about it. You've just got to accept it. Mm. When I went on Loose Women and I talked about being menopausal, some of my friends said, God, you were posh having a menopause. Because there was this, and I think there is still a thing that menopausal women are ladies who lunch, because you've got the time to think about it. You've got the money to
solve it. The luxury of having a menopause. Yeah.
Most women on low income haven't got time to stop and think about it. So they pot up with it because they haven't got the energy or the resource to do anything about changing it.
So here we are now, though, Carolyn, and you are in a very important position to have some very important conversations and to be doing some important work. It's interesting that, you know, you said it was about 2017 that this, you know, group of campaigners who wanted posters in GP surgeries. 2017 does feel like a time when no one was talking about the menopause, but obviously people were, you know, people were trying to make that happen. It's 2023. We still don't have posters in GP surgeries, do we?
Well, we're getting better. I think that there is a campaign which is trying to get that everywhere, and it's been quite successful. I think what's changed is it's no longer a subject that people are afraid to talk about. In fact, I would say now I have more people come on to me and say the word menopause than say anything else. Wherever I am, I've been on the train, I've been in service stations, I've been in all sorts of different places in the country. I was actually on a lounger in Fortaventura when a woman kept coming back and forth and looking and then moving away and then looking. And in the end, she just mouthed, menopause. I thought, yes, my husband was in a local supermarket a couple of months ago He'd gone there to get some odds and sods. I was in London and he phoned me up. A woman had gone on to him in the supermarket and said, "You Carolyn Harris's husband, aren't you?" And he said, "Yes." And she told him all about our menopause. He was absolutely terrified.
Did he have any advice for her?
Well, he's a little bit more understanding about it now. I mean, because it really, me sort of coming to this knowledge I was menopausal, I've explained a lot of things about the way I was during this time period. It's put like, things have slotted into place now and things now make sense. Whereas before they were, well, we just can't understand why that happened.
So from a parliamentary point of view, so first of all, you're going to have to forgive my ignorance in many areas of how government, parliament operate. So I know terms like select committees and task forces and stuff. I don't really know what any of them mean, Carolyn, if I'm perfectly honest.
Yeah, neither do I.
Don't you know? You're supposed to know. So where are we now? What's actually happening now? I know that menopause was not made a protected characteristic, which was one of the things that a lot of people were hoping for, because that would help us in the workplace. You know, just like pregnant women can't be sacked because they're pregnant.
Yeah.
We're hoping it would be the same for menopausal women. That hasn't happened. But what has happened? What is happening?
What is happening is not down to the government. That's really important to say, because the government will take credit for it, but the government haven't actually done very much. There's a few strands to this. In this wonderful place, the mother of all parliaments, what you get here is a platform. You get an opportunity to raise issues, either issues which affect, you know, like the cost of living and everybody wants to talk about it, or some people will come in with a more niche issue that they want to solve, which is a local issue or a specific campaign. And coming to a place like this, you have the opportunity to talk about it. So you get it on television without even trying, because either that's going to be shown on Parliament TV and people will watch and pick it up, or journalists listen to things and they say, "Oh, that's interesting. We haven't thought about that. We haven't done that." So people then start coming to you and saying, "Oh, will you do a story on this? Will you do a story on that? Or can we do this? Can we do that?" It's a wonderful platform. And when we started talking about it in the House of Commons chamber, it was very obvious that we piqued the interest with the political press, because all of a sudden we're talking about something which is a woman's health issue, but it's so much more than that, isn't it? It's a socioeconomic issue, which up until we started talking about it in terms of women giving up their job, women reducing their hours, women being on long-term sick, women walking away from relationships and marriages, women committing suicide. All of a sudden, people are thinking, "Oh, well, we didn't know this. We hadn't thought about all this part." All we know is that women go through the change. And you know, we can't do much about that because it's human nature. So that's what we did originally, by talking about it. We raised awareness, and we have now got it to a point where every credibility in raising the menopause in all areas of social policy, because we can identify with every single area of social policy somewhere where the menopause fits in. We started something called an all-party parliamentary group. And as an opposition MP, I've always had to be creative in what vehicle I use to affect change. So opposition MPs are not meant to get legislation in. We are just meant to shout at the government about things that we want them to do when they're not doing. But one of the things I learned when I first came in here was, if you want something done, you've got to work across the benches. You've got to work with everyone. It's not good being partisan and saying, "I'm Labour, you're Tory. I'm going to never speak to you. I hate you, bloody blah." If you want to get something done, you want consensus. So you want people from all around the chamber, all around the political spectrum, actually thinking about something and thinking, "Oh yeah, that's something I could support." So we decided to set up a parliamentary group on menopause to look at what the menopause is, how to treat it, what resources there, every aspect of it, from medication to work practices. So we started doing that. We have what we call private members' bill. So just after the Queen's speech, as it was then, they have a private members' bill draw. And it literally is 20 balls with numbers on in a glass bowl. 650 politicians will put their name next to a number. The first 20 drawn out are guaranteed to get time in the chamber to have a debate that could potentially change legislation.
So it's just like a lottery?
Just like a lottery. And I came out at number 3.
Well done.
And I was the only woman at that end of the scale. So I knew as soon as I had it that I had to do something on menopause. And we spent a long time trying to think, what were the biggest things that we needed to change? What were the biggest things we could change? But really, what we wanted to do was use it as a showcase to really get that menopause message out there. Suddenly, the UK Parliament are talking about menopause. They're going to introduce legislation on menopause. And that's what captured everyone's imagination. With the private members, but you only get a year in which to think about it, write it, debate it, you know, get it in passed in the chamber. And the more complicated it is, the less likely you are to get it through. And I was racking my brains, and it was somebody saying they were going to pick up their HRT and they were going to have to pay for it. And I was like, why do you pay for your HRT? Because I live in Wales, free prescriptions. And it suddenly dawned on me, if we could get the UK government to give women HRT free, one, it would be doing a good thing, and two, it would completely change the way people thought about menopause, and people would talk about it. And that's what we done. We campaigned. We didn't get it free. We got it a once-a-year annual payment of £19 something. But HRT became the poster girl of the bigger aim, which was to get the menopause message out there. And it was because of that we got people like Davina involved and Mariella Frostrop and Penny Lancaster, because they all came to Parliament that day and they were all outside and we were all campaigning. And it captured the imagination of programmes like Loose Women, programmes like This Morning, Lorraine, you know, Hello Magazine. Once people like that are talking about it openly, it becomes a subject that everybody feels comfortable about talking about. And since then, it's just grown and grown and grown and grown and grown. And we're at the point now where literally there is not a day goes by where there is not an element of menopause in my day. The events I go to, the companies that ask me to go and speak to them, the television coverage I do, the countries that are getting in touch and saying, you're doing wonderful stuff on menopause, what can you do for us? It's just mind-blowing.
Well, that's great to hear.
We use this place to showcase a subject that nobody ever speaks about, and now suddenly it's given everyone a license to talk about it. And companies now suddenly realise that if they don't do something about it, then somebody somewhere is going to come along and say, we're going to legislate to make you do that. And a lot of the bigger companies want to get in before that happens. And they probably do a better job than legislation would, because what I always say to them is that I can tell you what you should do, but what you really need to ask is the women working for you or the men working for you whose wives are struggling. Because I don't work where you work. If you were to ask me, what do I need in this place? It'd be completely different to what I would have needed when I was a dinner lady. You know, not two women are the same. No two workplaces the same, no two menopauses the same.
Coming up, I'm going to ask Carolyn a bit more about what exactly is happening in government when it comes to menopause. I know that she has gathered together a group of powerful women, faces we all recognise, Mariella Fostrop, Davina McCall, Kate Muir, and several of them were at a select committee meeting at the Houses of Parliament where Carol Vorderman was disgusted at the behaviour of government equalities ministers for not turning up to the select committee meeting and ignoring all of her communication. This is the moment Carol Vorderman absolutely let them have it.
There are women at the moment who are struggling to make ends meet. There are women who aren't earning a lot of money. They are going through a cost of living crisis. They're worried about their children and their education. They're worried about energy bills. They might be single mothers. For them to then challenge their place of work because they're saying, I need help, and that place of work saying, sorry, love, we'll get a new one in, it's impossible for them. And they're the women who don't have a voice. And that's why the Select Committee and the work that you're doing is very important. And the work that Menopause Mandate is doing. And Karen is doing. But, I mean, it's it's critical. I think we're at a critical mass. That Jeremy Hunt last week, you know, we were talking about the budget and we want more people to stay in the workplace. Really? Then why aren't your ministers here answering the Select Committee's questions? Why? Where are they? Maria Caulfield was having a cup of tea when we were having lunch over in Portcullis House. That's not much of an example, is it? You know, when women make up almost half of the workforce, and yet these are the two women in government who are meant to be representing the female population. I was disgusted, to be perfectly honest, by both of them. Absolutely disgusted.
I don't know exactly what HRT combination Carol Vorderman's on, but I definitely want a slice of that. Thank you very much. Let's go back to Carolyn Harris. On last week's episode, we had Diane Danziebrink talking about public information and coming back to this poster in a surgery. And, you know, I was saying, like, whose responsibility is that? It doesn't feel right that it's the NHS's responsibility. They have to spend time and money on the first step, which is just the information. I mean, you said the government hasn't done much on menopause.
I think we've done the work for them. That's the truth of it.
But do you think now you've put it on the agenda and shown that it can be a little bit of a sexy topic, which I think, you know, you, having these amazing, strong, famous women backing it as well, do you think they will do more, or do you think they've ticked that box?
No, they hate it.
They hate it?
They hate it. They hate that I'm doing it. They hate it. They hate it. It's like, there are some who are like, yeah, go for it. But those who have responsibility for it are like, why don't she shut the... Like I said, worst thing that could ever happen to anyone happened to me the day I lost my son. I got nothing to lose by being in here being gobby. You know, I never thought when I was 30 that at 55 I was going to become a member of parliament, have pink, blue and purple hair, wear glasses like Elton John.
You look amazing, by the way.
People actually stop and ask me what I think, and you know, and ask my opinion and value it. I think I've always had imposter syndrome, but most women have. And I never, ever thought I would be in a position where I would be talking about something that would completely changed a whole generation for women. That from now on, whatever happens from now on, this is not going away. If something happened to me tomorrow, there are thousands, millions of women behind me who will continue to talk about this. I've done what I wanted to do. I put it out there and now everybody's talking about it. We just got to build on that now to make sure that we're not just talking, we are doing what we need to do to make things better. And we are doing it, but we are doing it. Not the government, we're doing it.
Well, you're doing a fantastic job. And let's talk about some of those famous women. Carol Vorderman made a very fiery speech. I thought she might actually leap out of her chair and swing for someone, I don't know, to a Select Committee a month or so ago. And I think it's really interesting, isn't it, to hear the outrage. It's not just famous women lending their face to a campaign.
No, they lend you their stories.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these women are in an industry where traditionally you think about actresses and pop stars, they wouldn't want anybody to know who they are because it could have affected the work that they get. Mm-hmm. So these women are really brave because not everybody recognises that menopause can happen at any age and that something could be surgical. The mindset is menopause, reaching a certain age, ready to be over the hill. And we changed that narrative. And people like Carol and Penny and Davina and Marianne are talking about it. And Lisa Snowden's just done a book now and it's coming out soon. You'd never look at Lisa and think, oh, she's old enough to be menopausal because she's so gorgeous. Gabby Logan. These women work in an industry where we assume that they wake up in the morning and their makeup is still on. And that, you know, that they got somebody flouncing around them all day. But they're not. They're normal women who are going through the normal things that we do. And they're absolutely fabulous. I mean, I went out with Carol Vorderman last week. She's wonderful. She's Welsh. She's wonderful. But the reason why that happened, it was Carol, Kate Muir, who produced Davina's documentary. Karen Arthur, who I love, 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 love. She wears more colours than I do. And Mariella Frostrop. A couple of weeks before that, the Women in Equality Select Committee, which I'm also a member of, made some recommendations, which the government just knocked back. One of them was a protective characteristic. But a couple of weeks before Carol and them came to the committee, Kemi Badenoch came to the committee, and she's the Secretary of State whose responsibility it is women and equalities. And I put it to her that they had been very remiss in not doing a pilot and opening a discussion on making menopause a protective characteristic. And she had turned around and said to me, she said, Carolyn, the only reason that the committee said that is because it's left-wing. And implied that menopause was a left-wing issue. So she got so much flack over that. So when her junior was due to come before the committee a few weeks later, she refused to come. So we got on the phone to Carol and Marielle and whatever and said, there's a slot here. Do you want to come in and talk about menopause? But of course, it just made it a thousand times worse for them because they then got slated by celebrities in a select committee.
Amazing. I want to speak to you about what you're doing for your menopause. So obviously you are a completely new woman since you've got your estrogen, your progesterone and your testosterone. Testosterone is quite a hot topic, I think, at the moment. Kate Muir is absolutely on the warpath about testosterone, and quite rightly. I think the idea that it's only ever considered if it's a libido issue, when we know that it's a cardinal hormone that's very important.
It's so much more than that.
Yeah. But also, I know that you're on the collagen apple drink.
That's because I just like the taste of it. But collagen, I've started taking collagen, I would say about 4 or 5 months ago.
And how's it feeling?
Massive difference. I take now every day, take collagen and K2 because that's retention. It keeps all the collagen in. And I mean, the joint pain... Since I've been taking collagen, I mean, the joint pain has got better with HRT. But since I've been on the collagen, it's 1,000 times better again. My skin is got a little bit more flexibility to it. I just feel marvellous on it. I really feel tip-top. I wonder sometimes, why did I wait all these years to do this? I want to look at photographs of myself now compared to photographs of myself maybe 6 or 7 years ago. I look younger now.
Wow.
And I look better now.
And you feel obviously better.
Oh, a million times better. My husband says I've got too much life sometimes because I'm like the Duracell bloody bunny bouncing around the place sometimes. But no, I've got a new zest for life, which I never had. I hadn't had for a long time. I convinced myself during all those interim years that I'd be afraid to laugh or to get too excited by life in case people thought I didn't care about Martin anymore. But I mean, now I've accepted, you know, people do not think that. And I think I've stopped caring about what people think because I'm living for me now.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely appear to be a woman who doesn't care what people think, which I love. Carry on doing what you're doing. I know how hard it is from the other side to be able to impact. I like that you are drawing a lot of attention to things, and you're drawing a lot of attention to government's lack of action, which is a good thing. And hopefully, you know, we can push on to have some things changed. And I want to see this public health campaign. That's what I want to see.
Don't we all? I mean, there's so much we need to change. We need to change doctors' curriculum. We need to change access to HRT. We need a national formulary, not a local formulary. We need to put menopause on the coughs. You know what the quaffs are?
No, what's the quaffs? Sounds like something out of Harry Potter, the quaffs.
Yeah, Quidditch. The quaffs are that if you went to a doctor and you had a broken arm and they take blood tests, you think, why are they taking blood tests? Or they took your blood pressure. It's about trying to see where your cholesterol is. What's the likelihood of you having heart disease in 5 years' time? So the quaffs are like the studies that will then come out and say, heart disease is going up by blah, de, blah, de, blah. So the government, the doctors get incentivized for actually early identification of how someone's health is going to be. So they can see trends and what's going to be worse down the line. There's nothing on the coifs for women's health.
Nothing for women's health.
So if they put menopause on the coifs, all it would mean is that when you went to the doctor for anything, and certainly I would have thought for a smear or a coil or heavy periods or some kind of problem which could be associated with that region.
With being a woman.
Yes. They could ask you simple questions, which would give them a fairly decent indication as to how likely it is that you're perimenopausal or menopausal. So, for example, if you were going because you've got really bad periods, if they were to say, how long has this been going on? Have you got any aches and pains? Have you got any anxiety? Instead of writing prescriptions for depression, they could be writing prescriptions for HRT. And I think if we put menopause on the quaffs, then we would find a whole generation of doctors who know nothing about it would have to start understanding it a little bit better in order to be able to qualify for the quaff payments. And it would solve so many problems for women from year on in. And that's just one simple thing they could do.
How are we going to get it on the quaffs, Carolyn? How are we going to do that?
I ask all the time and I keep coming, no, we've got no intention of incentivizing any other conditions at this stage, but there are websites, Menopause Mandate, Harley Street Emporium, I think it is. There's loads of websites out there who actually provide you with lobbying letters. Start one, start writing. I'm going to be talking about it more. Other people are going to be talking about it more. We're going to be talking about the postcode lottery on HRT. And the more we talk about it and the more women get behind, and men get behind us and start lobbying their MPs, the more likely you will to see this stuff appearing on manifestos and appearing in policy further down the line.
Brilliant. Well, you know, the thing I love about making this podcast is speaking to fantastic women who know so much more about all of this than me. And now I know about the quaffs.
Learn something new every day.
You do. Thank you, Carolyn Harris, MP and all-round absolute warrior woman. Thank you so much for being on My Last Eggs.
Thank you for having me.
Next week on My Last Eggs, I'll be joined by blogger, podcaster, influencer, the host of the very popular Brummy Mummy of Two, Emma Conway, who, slightly young in her eyes for menopause, has suddenly been thrust into this whole new world. You can follow On My Last Eggs with new episodes released every Wednesday from Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Do send a message. We'd love to hear from you. Have a great week.